When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Hive Mind. I'm Meg and I'm here with Eli. Eli, we are T minus 5 days until the Oscars. How you feeling?
I'm so excited. It's my favorite night of the year.
Me too.
I mean that genuinely. It's the night I most look forward to every single year.
Yeah, I agree. We are going to do a full prediction episode with Nick. We're recording that tomorrow night. So look out for that toward the end of the week. You don't know what day it is when you're listening to this. Just look for it. But today we're going to talk about one specific movie. Before we do that, tell me what you've been watching.
So on Sunday, Skylar and I went and saw all of the live action short nominees for the Oscars. Our like indie theater in town, Broadway theater, is playing them. Just you can go see them all back to back. They're like 20 to 25 minutes each. I said this last year and I want to reiterate, don't sleep on the live action shorts. They're really good. In fact, I prefer them to the Best Picture nominees because the Best Picture nominees are all like 7 hours each and exhausting. But like the live action shorts are like great little films that are like 25 minutes. All five of them this year I really liked a lot. There's one from the UK, one from Denmark, one from the US, one from Canada, and then a Wes Anderson film, which I guess would be American again. Two of them are the most depressing thing I've ever seen in my entire life. One of them is called Red, White, and Blue, and it's about abortion access in the United States right now. And it is bleak in a way that I was not expecting. There's a reveal in it that is so like shocking and horrifying that like the entire theater like gasped I'd never seen an audience react that way. And there's a film called The After about dealing with grief and the loss of family that is like one of the most depressing things I've ever seen. There's a delightful film from Denmark about a man who goes to a morgue to say goodbye to his wife. And it's pretty charming and funny. He ends up like making friends with another guy there who's there to say goodbye to his wife. And it's a really sweet film. There's a really depressing film about a young man in juvenile detention in Quebec. It's pretty bleak. And then there's a Wes Anderson film. And I want to tell you,
I saw the Wes Anderson one and I liked it.
Yeah, it's good. I got to tell you, like, I kind of got sick of Wes Anderson probably 10 years ago.
And yeah, so, I think most people did.
Because it's just kind of the same shtick over and over again. And his films started to feel like a parody on himself.
And yeah.
So I would like try to watch his films and just be like, this is kind of embarrassing. And so I thought this short film was not going to be for me, but it's based on a Roald Dahl story. And it's really delightful. It's super creative. The one thing I'll say about this, though, is like it's favored to win the Oscar. And I kind of feel like it's unfair that it was even submitted because it's like this star-studded cast. Obviously, it's Wes Anderson, this huge name. It looks like it had a massive budget. And like all the rest of these films are like mostly unknown actors, unknown filmmakers on a low, like a pretty low budget, like just making trying to break into like the film industry. And it's like, I don't know. I feel like this category shouldn't be for people like Wes Anderson. This should be for other people.
Counterpoint. I was just listening to Blank Check and they're doing their Blanky Awards and they have Joe Reed on, who's the film critic. And they were talking about Astro City wasn't even nominated. people have just taken the craft of Wes Anderson for granted when in fact he's doing pretty remarkable things with filmmaking and he's never won an Oscar for it. So I'm not mad about it because I think that a short film might actually be the best place to display his artistry because when you're watching one of his feature films, it can get a little old, you know, it can get a little like, okay, we get the stilted dialogue and the single unmoving camera, you know, like, and I'm like, maybe this is where he really shines, and maybe this is a shift that will finally get him the recognition he deserves. So for that reason, I'm not mad about it, but I understand your point that like this should be a platform for younger, newer filmmakers who are trying to break into the industry. But I would also think film festivals are the place for them.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's more than anything, it's a budget issue where I'm like, I don't know if you come in with a really small budget and you do the best with that budget and you're up against somebody who like has basically unlimited funding and access to all of the most famous actors who are like willing to do it because Wes Anderson is involved. It's like this is not a fair playing field. And so I
Yeah,
don't know. We'll see.
but none of this is, so.
That is a very good point. And I mean, you can make the same argument in the best picture category too. Like films with low budgets competing against Avatar is always going to be kind of an interesting, like, how do you even compare the quality of a film when
Exactly.
the resources are so heavily lopsided? But we do it anyway, every year.
Here we are talking about it.
And I know we're probably going to talk about this on our prediction episode, but every year I do have to multiple times take a step back and be like, this is all pretend. Like I get like way too serious about it and like way too emotional about it. And then I have to take a step back and be like, this is just like a subjective thing where like a large group of people are voting on something based off of completely inconsistent and incompatible criteria among that large body. And like you
So
just have to like not get upset about it.
it's interesting you say that. Yesterday, I talked with Reed Smoot, who is my friend's father, and he's a cinematographer. He's huge in the world of IMAX, and he's a member of the Academy. So I was talking to him. You know, he can't tell me who he voted for because the Academy has really come down hard on that. But he could talk about the general voting process. And one of the things I asked him, I told him about how you and I have been going through past Oscar winners at a truly glacial pace, but how it seems like history got it wrong so much of the time. And so I asked him, why does these awards exist? What's the point of this? And he was like, well, it's pretty much an advertisement for our industry. Like yes, it's all made up. It doesn't really matter. I mean, it does, but it doesn't. There's no one truth about cinema. You know, the whole point of art is it's subjective and people are going to feel different ways about it. This just happens to be how a body of voters felt about something. So it is, I too have to every award season be like, you know what? This is not going to impact my life in any way, and it's probably not going to really impact anyone else's life in any way. He also talked about the Oscar curse, how a lot of winners have like a lot of terrible luck after they win. So in some ways it makes their life objectively worse, you know? So like it is good to be like, take a breath, touch some grass. This should be fun.
Is the sweet spot for like for people in the industry to be nominated but not win? Is that the sweet spot, do you
I
think?
mean, that's a really interesting question, but like, I think Paul Giamatti this year is in a great place, right? Like, oh, he should get an Oscar for that. He probably won't, but like, he'll continue to do good work and get renewed attention.
That's really interesting. Anyway, so I highly recommend people try and watch the shorts. We're tomorrow, Sky and I are gonna go see Pray For Me, the animated short nominees. We watched all of them last year and they were hot garbage. Like
Well,
hot
you also
garbage.
just generally don't like animation.
That's true, but last year they were truly bad. Like they looked like every one of them looked like a flip book that somebody made like the night before it was submitted. And
Sure.
like they were cheesy, and the stories were so bad, and that it like I don't know. It was interesting because last year, I had read that normally like Pixar has like a short that they submit that's like a high quality, and you have like kind of big industry players that will submit things, and for whatever reason last year there just weren't any, so it was like all just submitted by people that nobody had ever heard of before on extremely low budgets, which like good for them, but like they were hot garbage. Like they were not fun to watch, and so I'm not excited to sit down for almost 2 hours tomorrow and watch a bunch of animated shorts, but maybe I'll be surprised. Maybe it'll be fun.
I hope you are. I hope you have fun things to report.
What have you been watching?
Dune 2,
Yes.
loved it. I loved it so much. And I was like, the first one I liked and I was entertained, but I wasn't electric about this. Dune 2 was an electric experience for me. Gun to my head, cannot tell you what that movie's about. Like, broad strokes, you know, a messiah in the desert leading a group of people. It's pretty much Land Before Time. But
Okay.
the visuals of this thing are breathtaking. Like the design was perfect. Every scene, it was just so beautiful and so fun to watch. The performances were great. Bunch of hotties in this movie, really fun to watch. They do some really interesting like color work in for different planets. It is long, but I was never bored. And it was just one of those movie-going experiences that was just so enrapturing. Like I was just so enthralled the whole time. And I'm not a sci-fi girly. Like I will not watch a Star Wars. It has to be like under duress for me to sit down and watch a movie about fighters in space, but I really enjoyed this.
Why do you think they released it now, like February, March?
It got pushed because of the strike.
Yeah, but it just seems like a really weird timing for what will be an Oscar contender or should be an Oscar
No, okay.
contender.
So I was listening to The Town. Sorry that all my information is coming about podcasts. This is just the time of year where I'm like listening to all the podcasts to
Yeah.
vote, you know? And they're just like, that's not really relevant anymore. Like release time, COVID ruined that. So now it's like release them when they're ready. And the industry's such a mess because of the strikes and everything, that they're desperate for content. So they're like, yeah, release this now. And I actually like worked out for them because there's nothing competing with it at the
That's
box office.
an interesting point. And I guess like Everything Everywhere All at Once came out in like February, and I think is the most successful Oscar film of all time. Like it swept every major category.
Yeah.
So like, maybe it really has just gotten to a point where it does not matter. Which
Yeah,
like
I don't think it matters.
honestly, it's kind of fun to enter an Oscar season and be like, hey, all the Oscar movies are gonna come out now. But I'm not mad if these get sprinkled in throughout the year.
No, I think it's great. I think the only movie that really suffered from that last year was, I mean, because Oppenheimer was a summer release, but Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. You know, had it come out a little. Actually, I don't know. I think that the studio fumbled the ball on that one and just didn't do a good campaign. I don't even think it's the time of year you can blame for that.
That's really frustrating.
It's really frustrating. So yeah, Dune, loved it. Finally watched Bottoms, with Io. It is so silly. It is a very stupid movie. It's very funny. It's very like not another teen movie. But she does a lot of improv in it, and you can like see her trying not to break because it's so funny. She's really funny. She's really funny in it. Other great performances in it. We watched Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which was actually a recommendation from our friend Rebby, who is supposed to come on Hivemind to talk about it, but has COVID. So hopefully she gets well soon and will join us. But I really love this show. Mr. and Mrs. Smith is very fun, has a lot of funny things to say about marriage. Again, two hot people in like the best wardrobe. Like, I want everything Maya Erskine wears in this. I actually pulled up a list of like, where can I buy these items because I was obsessed with them. Really fun aesthetics. Parker Posey's in it, Ron Perlman's in it, lots
God.
of fun cameos.
Yeah.
True Detective. Did you watch the finale?
No, I only watched the first two episodes. Should I finish it?
No, I really didn't like it. I
Really?
really
Why?
felt like it was a letdown. I mean, it feel you could actually watch the first episode and the last episode and not miss anything and be like, that was fine. Which is too bad. I thought it was going to go some really interesting places and it just didn't. And then it hurried and tried and wrap everything up at the end. It just wasn't successful for me. We finished watching The Review, which was on Paramount Plus. It's very silly, again, very absurd. You can tell as they were like getting canceled toward the end of the show, they just let it go completely insane. They're doing completely insane things in a way that's like funny, but you're like, it's time for this to end. I did think it was a funny show. It's worth watching a season and a half if you're up for it. We found it on Paramount Plus.
What is that? What is it again?
It's the one where he reviews life. People send in reviews and it's like, what is it like to get addicted to cocaine?
Oh,
And he
yeah.
like has to like, and it ruins his life, obviously, because he has to do all of these insane things.
Yeah.
But it's pretty funny. I think that's pretty much it. And then in preparation for the Oscars on Sunday, we watched Zone of Interest. Bit of a tone shift here. Boy, is that a bummer.
Whoa. Yeah.
My only regret is that I did not see this in the theater. I wish I would have because there's a lot going on with both sound and visuals that I think would have been more successful in the theater, but still worked watching it from home. There were just points where I was like, did my TV break? Because there's like black for like over a minute and you're kind of like, what it was, but it's like very much setting the tone.
Yeah, it's I mean I think it's a really great film. This is going to sound extremely obvious, but it's upsetting. It's deeply upsetting, and it is a Holocaust film. And what's really interesting about it being upsetting is you never really, you actually don't see the Holocaust. It's not a graphic film in that way. It's not visually graphic, but you hear the sounds of the Holocaust happening throughout the film. And that is so deeply upsetting in a way that, like, if you had just told me that, like, oh, you hear the Holocaust happening, but you don't actually see it, I don't think I would have assumed that it would have been as upsetting as it actually was when I watched it. And it kind of put me in a depression for like 2 days.
I mean, I did hear that. I heard like you don't actually see it, but you hear it. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll be able to handle it. But what you're hearing is very rough. It's a real achievement in sound design for sure, because it so much of it is what you're hearing. And then there are a few visuals where you're like, oh, they're doing this over there. And it's very upsetting. In a way that felt even more effective than like Life is Beautiful, like even more effective than like let's show what it was like in the concentration camps, but not fully because it's too upsetting. It's like, no, we're showing you what's going on in the concentration camps, how it really looked, but just outside of it, and how easy it was for some people to compartmentalize it, which is the most upsetting part, right? Like the banality of evil is a phrase that's been used a lot in the description of this movie, but it really truly is effective in showing how this family just lives their life bo in a very boring way. Like this movie is boring while being horrifying, because that's what evil looks like. It's not a villain coming in to destroy a city. It's like just people who are just going about their lives while bad things are happening, and some of them are participating in the bad things.
And the ones who aren't directly participating in it are just completely fine with it,
Yeah.
or apathetic about it.
So I want to talk spoil. I mean, it feels trite to call it spoilers in this movie, but there are a couple of plot points that I want to talk to you about. If you have not watched the movie and you don't want to know a lot of details about it, turn this off, come back later. I forget what was my oh, but before we do that, a real quick synopsis of what it's about. It's about a Nazi officer and his family who live just outside Auschwitz. So they have a home, they have like a beautiful yard, and this idyllic farm life, but they are literally next door to Auschwitz. So you see a lot of
Like a few feet away from the Auschwitz fences.
like there's barbed wire on the top of their wall. And you see a lot of smoke, you see a lot of fire, you hear gunshots throughout the day, you hear lots of yelling, horrific, but they're so happy here in this property, and it's them living their life. It's mostly Sandra Hüller, I would say. I think she has even more screen time than Rudolph, her husband. And just how they're living their life. Is he gonna get a promotion? Is he gonna have to travel for work? Like very middle class, upper middle class problems juxtaposed with living right next to Auschwitz and how unbothered they are. So that's what you can expect going into this, if you can really expect anything. Now, I want to ask you a couple clarification points. What do you think the mother wrote in her note to her daughter? Her mother, who comes to visit, sees their beautiful house, feels so happy for her. They talk briefly about what's going on in the concentration camps, but not really. She wakes up in the middle of the night to see the fire of the crematorium, leaves the next morning, and leaves a note for her daughter. How did you read that?
I don't know, and I've been thinking about this for days because the mother truly acts like proud of her daughter for having this idyllic life, which is one of like the kind of jarring things about this film is it's like you guys know what's happening like literal feet from your house that you're just okay with. Like this is it's truly deeply horrifying. I don't know what was your interpretation?
My interpretation is that the mother thought she knew what was happening, or maybe heard what was happening and thought she understood it, but then actually seeing it was so troubling to her that she left. But I don't know if that reading's too simplistic.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't
I
know.
also, when he's making the memo about the lilacs, I'm a real dum-dum because I didn't understand what was happening there. It was only when I was reading articles about it that I realized the lilacs were code for if we're disposing of bodies, please make sure you're disposing of them properly. So that was something I missed. And then I think it's meant to be ambiguous, but at the end, you see Rudolph, who has just gotten this promotion. He's going to be overseeing the transfer of 700,000 Hungarians. Hungarians? Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think it was Hungarians.
To the concentration camps. He's going to be overseeing that operation, and he's thrilled to have this promotion. To the way they talk about this was one of the most upsetting parts for me, that they're in this board meeting and they're like, yes, 700,000 bodies, we're going to keep 25% of them to do with labor, and then the rest, we get it. Like, it's
So
so
casual.
so casual and just so horrifying. But he's leaving this party and he's walking downstairs and he stops to vomit. And then he stops again to vomit. And then you see this, it's present day, it's Auschwitz, it's the museum. And you see there, it's just they're cleaning everything. They're cleaning the crematorium, they're cleaning the hallway, they're cleaning the display with like so many pairs of shoes, it's hard to even process. Just piles and piles and piles in a long hallway full of shoes. Like, it's very upsetting. And it's you spend time with these janitors in this building for what, like 5 minutes?
Yeah, it's pretty long
And
closing scene,
it's long and it's uncomfortable. And then it comes back to Rudolph, who leaves. What did you make of that?
So both Sky and I had the same impression. I don't know if this is what was intended, but to us it seemed like the horrors that he is committing are somewhere catching up to him and manifesting themselves with him getting sick over it. Because like no matter how cruel and terrible a person can be, like disposing of bodies like this and being involved in something like this eventually has to catch up to you, right? Psychologically. And so we kind of saw that. And when it turned from him vomiting to the janitors in present day cleaning up, Skylar said out loud, wow, that's his legacy. And I was like, what do you mean that's his legacy? And Skyler said, his legacy is throwing up in a building that is now a museum to show how bad of a person he was. That's his legacy. And so I don't know that I thought that was a really interesting impression from Skylar, who is a lot more thought. He should be the co-host of this podcast, not me, actually.
It honestly should be Steven and
I was just gonna say it should be our
Skyler.
husbands. What are we doing?
They just don't love attention like we do,
That
unfortunately.
would be a very interesting podcast. I would love listening to it.
I would subscribe. I'd be a Patreon, the patron. Yeah, I think, you know, there's been some debate because he throws up and then it flashes forward. So it was like, is that actually a vision? Like, you know, because the order seems a little distorted. And it's, I read about Haas, what happened to him, and obviously he was tried for his crimes and executed, but he was unrepentant till the end. He gave a quote that said, I was, it was my job and I did my job well. Like, just no. So I, you know, but I think you're right. I think the body does keep the score, you know, and even if your mind can completely compartmentalize something physically, eventually you're going to have a response to what you know is evil. And he knows it's evil because when he saw remains in the river, he freaked out and pulled his children. Like he, there are moments when he, it gets him. And while we see him be stoic most of the movie, I think that you can't compartmentalize that forever as much as they all wanted to. I really wish I had seen this in the theater. If you have the chance, I think that's the venue for it. I don't, it's, it still was very affecting at home. It's obviously upsetting. It's a movie about the Holocaust, so be prepared.
It is, it's PG-13, because again, it's not visually graphic.
Yeah.
And so it's honestly kind of remarkable that they were able to make a Holocaust film that is as upsetting as this is and keep it PG-13. Like, it's honestly kind of surprising.
I actually didn't know it was PG-13. I thought it was R. But that's interesting. There's some chatter about this. This could potentially be the dark horse. You mentioned last time we talked, given the state of the world and again the banality of evil, that this might gain some traction. I don't know that there's any hope for anything other than an Oppenheimer sweep, but if this was the surprise win, it would make a lot of sense to me.
Because it largely the message of this film is this is what happens when evil takes over and people don't do anything to try and stop
Yeah.
it, or like ignore it, or apathetic to evil uprising. And
Right.
so, and that really is the conversation of the moment, and has been for the last several years. And so it'll be interesting to see if that is a factor for Oscar voters. I don't know. I strongly recommend this to everyone. I mean, I would not maybe show this to my small children just because I think they would not understand it and it could be
How
upsetting.
old were you when you saw Schindler's List?
So, to be honest, I still have not seen it all the way through. I have tried multiple times and I always bail because it starts to bum me out too much, which, like, I'm sorry if that makes me bad. Maybe I should just watch it all the way through, but my parents, in the 90s, do you remember they started showing it on TV every year on
On
Netflix?
PBS, and that's where I watched it.
So yeah, so the first time they showed it on TV, it was like on a Sunday night. It was this big deal, because it was going to be uncensored. It was just like, this is the film Schindler's List, the whole thing. And my parents were like, okay, we want you guys to watch this. I was probably 10, maybe 11.
Yeah.
And my parents were like, yeah, we're all going to watch this. And I made it maybe halfway through and bailed because it was like, it was upsetting me way too much. And that has just always kind of been, I most recently tried it like probably 4 years ago and made it about halfway through and then bailed again. So I don't know. What about you? How old were you?
Yeah, I was that age. I was in sixth grade, so 11, I guess. And I watched this and it's had me thinking, like, I haven't heard my kids really talk about learning about the Holocaust at school. And I wonder if this is a movie I should show them. Because I This and have you read the book Devil's Arithmetic?
No.
That is that's it's a young adult book and it is wildly upsetting, but I read it around the same time that we saw Schindler's List, and I feel like those two things really solidified what it. I mean, you hear about the Holocaust and you're like, wow, that's terrible. But it's the individual stories that really make it emotive to learn about the historical horrors. And I think Schindler's List and Devil's Arithmetic were the two pieces of media that really showed me how horrific it was. And I would probably add this to that list. I think it's on that level of effectiveness.
I will say, so I have been to Auschwitz actually 4 times.
Oh, you
Not because
have? I've
I,
never been.
yeah, not because I enjoy going to Auschwitz, but because I like Poland a lot. I've been to Poland a bunch of times, and I've gone with people who had never been. And so I'm like, well, I don't want to go back to Auschwitz because seeing it once is enough. But I've been with other people where I'm like, you really do need to go, so I'll go with you, you know. And so I've gone 4 times, and it's this is going to sound very obvious, but I'm just going to say it anyway. It is a bummer. Like it's the heaviness that you feel in that place is, it's like hard to explain, and it just feels like oppressive. Like there's no shade. It's just like all of these like really horrifying looking structures and buildings, because we've grown up seeing images of them and we know what they represent. And you're just kind of walking around, the sun beating down on you, and it's just like quiet and somber and heavy. And you see, you know, there are some plaques and some, you know, explainers like, this is what this building was for. And you kind of walk through and read up and like see it in context, like, oh, that's where they came in, that's where they were shuffled in, that's where the you know, they were burned alive, and that or their bodies were burned, and that's where the gas chambers were. And you just kind of walk around, and it's impossible. I think impossible to spend any time there and not be depressed for like a day at least. This film gave me the exact same feeling that I have had when I have actually been at Auschwitz.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because throughout the film you see the structures poking up over the fence. You know,
Yeah.
those the famous kind of Auschwitz, you know, where the train came in, and that building there, and you see all those buildings, and they're familiar to us because we've seen images of them throughout our lives. But I was like, oh yeah, like this is what it looks like if you're just right outside the fence at Auschwitz. Like this is that's the place, you know.
Interesting.
Did you know that they filmed the do you know how they filmed this? Have you like seen any of the info on it? So
Like what specifically?
they put cameras all throughout the house and didn't have a crew with the family, because
Oh,
they wanted the family
interesting.
to feel alone in the house, because they thought that would help affect their performances a little bit. And so they just had like cameras, and the crew was not on the property largely. And so the family was like there alone filming their scenes without having just like a ton of people around them. And my understanding is the director wanted to do this because he thought that the family would more naturally give a more natural performance if they felt like they were just like living in this space and like having these experiences without, you know, others around them. And I think in particular, they were hoping that that would help the children's performances. I mean, it kind of seems like that would be such an eerie project in any circumstance, but like to not have crew around would just make it even creepier to be involved. But I'm really curious about that decision. It's really interesting to me.
Two thoughts on that. There's no close-ups in this movie. Like, it's maddening how wide the shots are. And it really, again, adds this boring factor where you're like, oh, I'm just watching someone live their lives. But then these things happen where you're like, oh my gosh, this is so terrible. The kids' performances in this are so horrifying. There's a moment when one the older brother locks the younger brother in a greenhouse and makes a hissing noise at him as though he's in a gas chamber, because they've literally seen this happen over the fence, you know. And the I hope these kids are okay. I hope there was a lot of care and attention paid to them on set, and some very, I mean, I have to assume Jonathan Frazier did take all the precautions, but like that, it's so upsetting. It's just so wildly upsetting.
Yeah. So this is on the Wikipedia page. I'm just looking at this. The film was shot with digital cameras equipped with some particular lenses. The director embedded up to 10 cameras in and around the house and kept them running simultaneously with no crew on set. The approach, which he described as Big Brother in a Nazi house, allowed the actors to improvise and experiment extensively during filming. The director aimed for a modern look and did not wish to and only use practical and natural lighting.
Yeah, it feels like that. I can see that. Sandra Hüller is just a really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Between this and Anatomy of a Fall, I think that she gave two of the best performances of the year.
Yeah, big year for her.
Yeah. Tough to end a discussion about Zone of Interest on any kind of high notes, so I think we'll just end it. Well, but we will.
Let's real quick run through what it's nominated for.
I love that. Great idea.
So we got Best Picture, of course. Best Director for Jonathan Glazer. Best Adapted Screenplay, Jonathan Glazer also wrote the
screenplay. I said Frazier. I'm sorry. It's Jonathan Glazer, not Frazier.
Yeah. Best International Feature Film for the United Kingdom, which is interesting.
Which Reed predicted it will win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then Best Sound, which would be, again, this is a sound movie.
Yeah, I think it deserves Best Sound.
The sound is like the main character of the film, which is really interesting. I don't know if I've ever seen a film where I would say that.
Yeah. Ugh, it's so rough. We will talk more about it later this week when we do our predictions. But again, I this feels like it deserves Best Picture to me. Obviously, it's probably not going to happen, but we'll see. We'll be back later this week to talk about the predictions in full. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.